Let us stand firm against any and all arbitrary authority that threatens the personal sovereignty of one or all. That which will not bend must break, and that which can be destroyed by truth should never be spared its demise. It is done. Hail Satan.
Welcome, everybody, to a special edition of Satanic Study Hall. We are streaming live at the Satanic Temple Virtual Headquarters here at the Satanic Estate and also on Twitch for our first time. This has actually inspired us to start fucking with some video games here. Some Satanic Study Hall video game fuckery is in our future. But either way, we have a full house here, and it is an absolute pleasure to be included in the virtual headquarter lineup. Thank you all so much for being here. We see all the activity in the chat. Principal Pan is in the house. If you are familiar with Principal Pan, he unfortunately is responsible for keeping us in line. So Principal Pan, do your thing in the chat. Principal Pan will also be collecting questions. We'll talk more upon that later. So tonight here at Virtual Headquarters, we are presenting a special treat for everybody titled An Evening with Krampus, featuring author, educator, and Krampus enthusiast, Matt Lake. Matt Lake is the author of many satirical children's books, including Night of the Krampus. Now, that book is illustrated by a local author to us here at Study Hall by the name of James Link.
Jimmy! Woo!
Yes, Jimmy's work is fantastic, and you'll be able to check that out when we feature an audiobook or a visual audiobook version of Night of the Krampus at the end of Matt Lake's interview. Now, after this brief introduction of who and what Satanic Study Hall is, we will dive into who Krampus is, a bit about his origins and significance throughout history, and translating a little bit into our modern culture. So, moving forward, my name is Bill. I am a member of the Satanic Temple, and I'm also a member of Love City Satanist. And today I am joined by...
I am Johnny Voorhees. I am also a member of the Satanic Temple and of Love City Satanists. And I am strongly aligned with the Sativa Temple.
That's just because he, just a little earlier to take
you're
the edge off.
We're not face to face right now.
Yeah, sorry, Johnny.
Good evening, everyone. I am Father Al. Bless you, my children. I am also a member of the Satanic Temple, and I am joined tonight by Eros, who is one of the members of our Baphomet family. And Belial, Eros misses you very much.
Well, we miss you too, Belial.
They're friends now. I am Veronica, the Valedictorian. I am sometimes on this podcast the smartest person in the room, with the exception of tonight and several other nights. I am aligned with Johnny Voorhees. And therefore, by default, aligned with the seven tenets of the temple.
I am a valedictorian.
Oh, God.
That's well said, Johnny. So for the last six episodes or so, I have been trying to get Johnny to introduce what Satanic Study Hall is.
Now you're going to put me on the
spot. Just a little bit. I'm not going to ask you to. I'm not going to ask you to tell me how your week was. But I do need to know. Well, I just hit my microphone. A little party foul there. But I do need to know if you have the document open on your screen. Can you tell our viewers what Satanic Study Hall is?
I will do my very best.
So, all right.
What is Satanic Study Hall? Dramatic pause. Satanic Study Hall is a podcast. Duh. That was immaculately conceived in the dirty stable of Pennsylvania in July of this year. with the intention of bringing a bunch of like-minded degenerates and Satanists back into a classroom setting for a thorough education.
Thorough? I don't know about thorough, yeah. But...
In study hall, we discuss Satanism from inception to modern day. We explore Satanism in news, music, movies, creative arts, pornography, literature.
Porn.
Or, as I like to say, so I don't have to say all these big words, everything satanic.
Yes, everything satanic. Now, if there are any new students here in study hall tonight, be sure to introduce yourselves in the chat. Like I said, we've got Principal Pan in the house, as well as some of our patrons and study hall supporters and degenerates that join us every other Sunday. So if you have questions about the presentation, I can't make any promises based on how much banter and Zoom interference there is with this unique little COVID-based presentation we put together. But if we have time for questions at the end, we will definitely jump into them. So send a question in chat and we'll try to get to that at the end. Now, also be sure to check us out at satanicstudyhall.com or on your favorite podcast platform. We are pretty much on them all. We put out episodes bi-weekly on Sundays, and the next couple episodes that are coming out feature Mason Hargett from the award-winning documentary Hail Satan, as you are so all familiar cool. with.
Yeah, that was such a cool interview.
That was. It was fantastic. Sorry, I dropped something. All right. Anyways. But yeah, so we also have Stephen Bradford Long joined us for part two. Now, this is a normie Satanist series that we're featuring. So definitely, definitely join us. And the next episode on that will be coming out tomorrow. So we would love if you would check it out.
Shout out to all of our normie Satanists out there.
Yeah, there's a lot of us out there, that's for sure. Outside of that, you can find us across all social media channels. Facebook at satanicstudyhall.com. Instagram's the same. Twitter, you can find us at SatanicSH. And now here on Twitch, which is at Satanic_study_hall. Did I say that right?
No.
Is that right, Johnny?
No.
Yeah, I know you have it written down somewhere.
No, the capitalization is...
No, that's for Twitter. Okay, yes, all right.
But you still didn't say
no,
that.
No, for Twitter. No, for Twitter, though.
I didn't say that shit.
Twitter, you can find us at SatanicSH, where both the S's and the H are capitalized.
Very important.
But nonetheless, we are going to move forward and talk about something really special to us, and that is the Goat Farm. If you haven't been listening to the podcast, if we're new, we do have an interactive Facebook group called Satanic Study Hall Presents the Goat Farm. And that is an opportunity for our listeners to interact with each other, with the hosts. Every member of our panel on this rotating bench of degenerates that we have is featured. We've got Charmaine and the Bean, Aria's on there, Allie, who is in our very first personal journey and who is our very first patron. She's in the farm participating, and just so many more members from around the world. So check us out on there. Just search Satanic Study Hall and the Goat Farm, and you'll find us there as well.
I do want to mention, we have some weekly art rooms in effect now, whereas there's a lot of artists in our satanic community. If you were used to going to a coffee shop or, in one member's case, a pub and doing your art, if you want to join the farm and join one of our art rooms weekly and just share your crafts with us while we all kind of sit in a virtual room and complete them together, I absolutely love them. And I did want to shout out the new art studio we have going on in the farm.
Yeah, also, we do have the Slasher app. If you want to reach out to us there, check us out.
The Slasher app is new. We've been playing with that. I'm excited about that. There's a lot of interesting people. And the quickest way to drop us a line, overall, if you have a question, comment, concern, complaint, you want to tell us to fuck off, whatever the case may be.
On a daily basis.
We've gotten a few of them, that's for sure. Mostly around the Devil's Dictionary. That's a whole nother thing. So the quickest way to do that is by emailing us at satanicstudyhall@gmail.com. And now that we've gotten all that little official business out of the way, I think it's time to officially begin our evening with Krampus. What do y'all think?
I think it's time to officially begin with a joke.
A joke?
Sure.
Let's hear it.
What you got?
What do Chuck Norris and Krampus have in common?
What?
They both like to engage small children. #prosecute children.
Prosecute Chuck Norris. There's a couple of people out there that have been waiting for Chuck Norris to pop its way into this presentation. So I guess that happened. Well done, Johnny.
Thank you.
You're looking at me right now. I'm giving you the thumbs up.
All right. On that note, gentlemen, have you done all your book reviews like I asked you to do?
No, I just copied yours.
Headquarters, they all paid me to do their homework for them.
Real quick before we go, Johnny, could you move, could you move your microphone closer to you? People are saying you're a little low. Can you move your microphone a little closer to you? I can't see. I'm looking at the notes. I don't know if people can give us the thumbs up in VHQ if that's a little better. We got a couple of private messages that Johnny is a little low. But all right, we'll work on that. Let us know if that, Johnny, just say like ABC or something.
ABCD.
All right, if that sounds good, give us a thumbs up in chat. If not, we'll work on it. Veronica, go right ahead.
All right, everybody, A Night with Krampus. Who is Krampus? Krampus is a Christmas concoction of pagan myth originating out of the mountainous alpine region of Europe, which spreads across Greater Austria, Germany, Northern Italy, and all the way to France, which I did double check, guys. I looked at those maps. He is a demonically frightening creature resembling a goat humanoid not too different from our own Baphomet, which, in my opinion, may explain some of the appeal of Satanists, affection that Satanists have toward him. In his mouth are sharp teeth and a long serpent-like tongue. On his head are daunting horns, and fur that covers his body is usually depicted as being either red, white, or black. He has one cloven hoof and one beastly clawed foot.
Beastly.
Sounds like one of my ex-girlfriends, actually.
Oh, Al, I'm sorry.
Not as sorry as I am.
I've seen her. It's 100% accurate. Oh, Krampus' no. Hands are adorned with razor-esque claws, perfect for snatching children.
Wait, Al, does that sound like your ex-girlfriend, too?
It's like you all know her already.
Annually, men in these dark, treacherous pockets of the Alpines would dress up as the creature to ward off winter spirits. Villagers also believed that Krampus and his Pöchten, as Madeleine calls them, Pöchten, which are, a definition, unlikably bastardly elves, as our own Bill has deemed them.
The little fuckers, the Pöchten.
May they all burn.
No, the Pöchten are actually pretty chill.
Roamed the mountains of the Alps, causing trouble. The Pöchten would whip lazy villagers, bad children, and drunkards. Parents would often warn children that Krampus was coming by leaving gold-painted sticks in their homes all year around to scare them into behaving. But, guys, our favorite thing happened. Well, our favorite thing entered the region. Do you know what that was?
Christianity?
It was 12th century Christianity, Johnny.
That's my favorite era.
I like 13th century better.
No, it's not. Better.
And with it, can you guess what it brought?
Snow?
Theocratic bullshit. And with that, the first attempts at smothering the lore. Those who resisted this change began to morph Krampus's roots as the son of the Norse underworld goddess with Christian concepts of Satan and hell. Which I guess in retrospect, I wasn't born in that time. But it would make the combination a little bit easier, just with that association of the underworld and the newer Christian concept of hell. The addition of eternal chains and the reckoning of potentially being dragged down to hell conformed to expanding Christian dogma taking hold in the land. In the centuries to come, the evolution of both Saint Nicholas and Krampus created an unlikely partnership.
They became BFF.
Just a bit. Krampus arrived first to punish naughty children the night before old Saint Nick would arrive on his feast day with goodies for the righteous.
Fuck the righteous!
Yeah, what they said. I missed that cue.
We're all in concession. So, let's talk about the night before the righteous get rewarded. Krampus Night, or Krampus Lof. The night before...
Krampus Nacht.
Krampus Nacht. Nacht. Right,
yeah,
there. Nacht.
There,
I'm doing it.
Nacht.
There.
There we go. That's better.
It's not the Rona, people. No reason to be scared.
That's better.
Good point, Al. The night before the Feast of St. Nicholas, December 5th, is Krampus Nacht, where Krampus has his night to roam.
No!
People celebrate clad in costumes complete with wooden Krampus masks, bells, and fabled chains, while running throughout the town parading and frightening all in attendance. This sounds like Johnny and Bill every Tuesday night. This is known as Krampus Run, or the Krampus Lauf, which has regained modern popularity throughout Europe and recently the United States. Adults and children alike fill the streets and join in on the festive lashings.
Nice.
The night of the Krampus includes the half-goat, half-demon himself appearing to each house to beat the children with birch sticks. Another favorite word of Matt Lake's. Throw them in his sack and carry them down to hell forever to serve.
Our dark lord, serve him or read the wrath of my children. I will beat them with the birch sticks.
No. I couldn't have said it better, Johnny. It was perfect.
Thank you.
It is customary to leave out Krampus's favorite drink, schnapps, which we're a little bit acquainted with.
Yeah, virtual happy hour, everybody.
All right. As an offering, Satanic Study Hall and Matt Lake kept this tradition alive and destroyed a few bottles of Rumpelmintz to celebrate us being invited here to VHQ, which, again, thank you guys so much.
Thank
we are
you.
So happy to be here.
Yes.
We've had a lot of fun through this whole journey, and this night is just adding to that.
And yes, I can personally attest to how dangerous the Rumpelmintz can be. And if you want to see some of our fuckery from the last time indulging in this horrible, horrible Rumpelmintz, go check out our Patreon.
I told you not to talk about that, but he did.
Shameless plug.
Damn it, Al.
The day that precedes is a day full of rewards for all of the children that were fortunate enough not to suffer the wrath of Krampus. Children leave their shoes out, and if they haven't been dragged down to hell, they will find treats in their shoe to reward them.
Or dog shit.
Yeah, like deer shit.
I was just thinking like cat turds, but yeah, completely inappropriate.
All right, so this is a continuation of the smothering of Krampus, actually, and this is something I didn't know, which is why I added it. I found it interesting, and that is Hitler's Christmas confusion. Yes, we just brought Hitler into this. The High and Late Middle Ages were not the only tough years for the Beast. While Germanic fascism reigned in the 1930s, Adolf Hitler, along with his head propagandist, Joseph Goebbels, sought a regional return to Nordic and pagan tradition in order to unite the German people under Nazism. Germany saw the restoration of solstice rituals, evergreen and Yule customs, and sun wheels to replace Christmas stars. This was also a means of undermining remaining challenger powerhouses like the Catholic Church, who in Austria still reattempted to ban Krampus activities like dances and costume making. However, ironically, Hitler's encouragement of German folklore when clashed with various nationalistic crackdowns still seemed to have generated an artistic revitalization for Krampus. Many traditional wooden masks you see today were carved during this decade. And that's really interesting. I am a complete history nerd, but I didn't know that Hitler went so far to reintroduce, pagan mythos into the culture and not like, you know, just because it was cool, but to accumulate power. But yet the Austrian Catholic nationalistic party that formed during that time wasn't having it. So they did clash. And a lot of the cool wooden masks you see were apparently made between the 1930s and the 1940s.
Sounds cool. So I guess it's on to me now, because I have a part in this too that I copied word for word. I copied it word for word from the valedictorian.
All that hard work changes.
Did Veronica write this for you, Johnny?
Right? Yes. Now I have to read all these big words that I don't know. So, I mean, and now with all this talk about tradition and shit, you know, we will talk a little bit about Krampus cotton and Krampus being featured on holiday cards. Yes, I said holiday cards. With the popularity of Krampus steadily growing through Europe in the 18th and 19th century, the use of Krampus cards or Krampus cotton became popular. Sometimes
wait, can you say that again?
Krampus cotton.
Can you say? Oh, thank you.
I love his German accent.
Became popular. Sometimes introduced with Gruß von Krampus. Which means greetings from Krampus. I don't know if I said that right.
It was more along the lines of Gruß.
I think you're the only one of us who have said it correctly.
Is it Gruß?
Gruß von Krampus, maybe?
Gruß von Krampus?
That's close enough.
Okay.
Sorry for butchering in advance.
I said that. These cards usually have humorous rhymes and poems. In some, Krampus has sexual overtones. He is pictured with buxom women.
Buxom, that's a good word. That's a good word.
The most popular and illustrative Krampus carton originates out of Austria, in particular by the artist working for the Wiener Werks.
I'm right along with you. I'm reading the script. Well, I think
one letter
Wiener Werkstatt.
Let's do it with a Wiener Werkstatt.
Wiener Werkstatt.
That's what I said.
We'll go with that one.
Before the First World War, original Krampus carton depicted the half-goat, half-demon as a darker, more demonic Krampus, and evolved over time into more of a washed-down Cupid-like creature. Overall, Krampus Yggdrasil was not aimed to be warm and fuzzy. They depicted everything from Krampus whipping, beating, and dragging kids off to hell, to Krampus smiling.
Oh, Eros.
To Krampus being depicted as a woman and whipping tiny men with her bed sticks.
Bed sticks.
I'm slightly turned on, I must admit.
And another example, there is a smiling woman holding a defeated Krampus in the air by his hoof, which spawned some rather interesting gender politics.
We won't go there, though.
No, we won't.
Fast forward to...
Most Americans were not exposed to Krampus cars until around 2004, when graphic designer Monte Beauchamp...
Beauchamp? I think so.
...published an entire book of Krampus cards and even organized an art show to highlight them. I apologize for my shitty reading.
No, that's beautiful.
I'm failing English.
Krampus card art shows, yes.
John, you're good. I'm at the mercy of our producer now who's putting this all together, but at this point, you did fantastic.
Bill, if I was there, I'd slap the shit out.
I haven't gotten a red flag yet, so we're just going to keep on moving.
All right, so moving on, let's discuss a little bit about the newfound popularity of Krampus, and especially amongst Satanists. It appears that the growing movement of anti-Christmas celebrations and traditions is picking up steam as time progresses. There is a Krampus movie franchise with numerous titles under its belt. Kevin Smith is producing a project called Anti-Claus.
Which I will see.
The Jim Henson Studio is producing a work titled Happy Krampus, or as I think it should be titled, Krampus the Frog here.
You know, before we go any further, again, I'm getting my phone's blowing up. We're getting DMs. We know Al's video is dropping in and out, but hopefully the audio is staying consistent for everybody. We do appreciate you kind of working with the tech glitches and whatever's going on. But from what I hear, the audio is good. So video hopefully will catch up. So thank you for kind of working with us.
Thank you, guys.
Yes.
Cookie Krampus.
That's true. As a YouTuber that I follow says, I have a face for radio and a voice for print.
Oh, stay on track, Al.
Moving right on.
You just got to be afraid of Gonzo's nose.
Krampus parades are picking up steam throughout the U.S., specifically in Los Angeles.
Boo.
Krampus appears in the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. You know, the one who borrowed the likeness of TST's Baphomet. Under the demon name Bartle in the 2018 episode.
Yeah, I wouldn't have said that.
I don't know, but it's okay. They borrowed it. But all is well in the world of litigation, from what I understand.
Now, Krampus does not sit atop the Christmas demon mountain alone. There are many more demonic and terrifying holiday entities just waiting to dish out punishment and obedience. In Krampusland, also have an alpine witch by the name of Frau Perkta, who is known to rip out your guts and replace them with garbage.
My kind of woman.
In France, Hans Trapp is a French devil worshipper who resides deep inside the forest until just before Christmas, where he dresses as a scarecrow to scare the little buggers into behaving.
I'm sorry, but I can't be scared by a guy named Hans.
You've never met Hans. Hailing from Germany.
I'm Hans.
Hailing from Germany! £340!
Belsnickel dispenses both sweets and justice depending on your behavior throughout the year. Have you been admirable or impish?
I don't know. Ask Dwight Schrute. I fucking love that episode. I know Thomas was played that in one of his videos the other night. That was awesome. One of my favorite scenes and episodes.
Belsnickel.
Icelandic lore brings us two Christmas legends. Jólakötturin, a Christmas cat who will pounce on you and devour you whole for failing to receive new clothing as a reward for hard work and good behavior.
That's a cool fucking cat.
As well as Grilla, who is an ogress who scoops up, cooks, and eats children who struggle to listen to mummy and daddy.
Grilla also has 13 children. Look into them.
13 children. I wonder if that number is on purpose.
They are called the Yule Lads.
All right. I think that kind of brings us to the end of our little piece here. Am I right?
You are right. It is time to begin our interview with our featured guest, Matt Lake. As mentioned before, Matt is an author, an educator, a Krampus enthusiast who has written such books as Weird Pennsylvania and Weird Maryland. Please check them out, especially Weird Pennsylvania. And is featured in various other books in that series. Other works of his include Here Be Monsters, Gothic Poetry, and Night of the Krampus, which we will be playing a visual audiobook of at the conclusion of our interview with him. On that note, degenerates, we present to you our sit-down interview with Matt Lake. Enjoy.
Enjoy.
Enjoy it.
With us today, as you can see, we have author Matt Lake with us here in class. So welcome, Matt.
Hi, it's good to be here.
Fantastic, and it's great to have you. So without wasting any time, we've done a brief introduction of you so far, but could you tell us a bit about yourself, a little bit about your background, and who Matt Lake is today?
Well, I'm basically a word nerd. I like exploring words, and that was my strength in school, you know. But I grew up in England, in the middle part of England, Birmingham. And me and Ozzy Osbourne, we're from the same town.
Ozzy!
And we all sound like that. The edges have been completely knocked off my accent because I needed to be understood. He didn't need to be understood. He can sing clearly, but, you know, the rest of the time he's just, you know, talking like this all the time.
Sharon!
We all talk like that. Yeah, we're very slight. The brain damage, you know, the brain damage and the drugs and that, that's that. This is how Birmingham people sound. I came from there, I, you know, have been traveling the globe ever since, picking up careers and interests along the way, and you know, that's about it, really. I'm just a global traveler who just settles in places and then, you know, stays there for 5 years and moves somewhere else.
Very nomadic. And we've introduced you and talked about some of your works briefly, but can you tell us about, before we get into the Krampus material, some of your science and technology writings, books and history as far as literature of that kind?
Well, I come from a family of chemists. My uncle was a doctor of chemistry, and so I was fascinated with all sciences. I studied them all for quite a length of time, even though I'm basically a linguist by training. Fascinated me. When I came to this country, I had to earn a living. So I wound up editing a series of computer magazines. And that got me into general science writing, which I've been doing since the late 1980s. So, you know, if you give me a topic to investigate and study, and then I can give you anywhere between 500 and 3,000 words on it. Bang. You know, this was my stock in trade for years.
I'm excited because a seed I wanted to plant for everybody here at Virtual Headquarters is Matt will actually be joining us on a podcast separate from Virtual Headquarters here, where we're going to dive into a lot of the stuff that may pique your interest as we go through our material here. So we'll definitely explore that for sure. So when it comes to dark folklore in particular, what sparked your interest into that genre?
It was an exposure to too much saccharine folklore. Christmas in particular. I have a bunch of Christmas traditions that I grew up with. When I emigrated here, which was now more than 30 years ago, there were a different set of traditions. It was Rankin Bass. I didn't know what that was about, you know, and it seemed a little too sweet. And it got to the point where it was entirely too sweet for me. There's an element of darkness to Christmas. You know, the most popular Christmas story of all time has got to be The Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens. And yes, it's about redemption and about a bitter old man becoming a sweet old man. But, you know, it's got ghosts in it. And Christmas and horror, this season of darkness and light, is that balance between the two, I think, is imperative. And, you know, it was veering too much to the sweet for me. Everything was a little too pleasant, a little too saccharine. And I just started to dig much more deeply into the dark stuff, which had always sort of interested me anyway. But I was, you know, I was in that original wave of goth fans when I was, you know, in my 20s, went to school with the Sisters of Mercy, that kind of trick. You know?
Okay. But, yeah, it was, more podcast stuff right there for sure. I'm writing that down.
And so, you know, I just started exploring that stuff a lot more closely.
How did the weird book journey begin?
in a way you wouldn't anticipate, actually. It was I did a favor for a book publisher. They had had a disastrous project and they wanted it fixed. So they also had blown all their budget on the previous writer and previous editor, and it was a wreck. So I fished it out of the toilet, basically, and they said, we owe you one. And so I did this job for a very small budget. And then they came to me saying, we've got just the project for you. It's called Weird New Jersey. And I said, well, I'm not from New Jersey. What exactly are you trying to tell me?
What do you want from me here?
They said, we have a fantastic book, but it's three times too long. It's a group of people out of New Jersey. They've been putting out a magazine for 10 years. We've got terrific material, but it's way too long. Can you cut it down? So it was that word nerd part. And, you know, I was there to trim down a book to, you know, trimmed down a huge manuscript to a book-length work, and that was what I was hired to do. Partway through that project, I was in the middle of editing this phenomenal story about a woman who was haunted by this ghost, and you know, she felt her husband getting into bed behind her, and she reached over to, you know, hold his hand or whatever, and there was something like furry and grotesque. At that point, my office phone rang and I leapt out of my skin. So yeah, this was really great material. And when the book came out, it was very successful. And they said, we're going to do one for all of the US. Do you want to edit that? And I was going, yes,
absolutely. Sign me up.
And then when that came out, they said, well, yeah, what states have you lived in? We're going to try and do all the states. And so I wound up doing Weird Pennsylvania, Weird Maryland. And I wound up doing Weird England.
That was my next thing. Oh, I thought I saw your name on that. Yeah.
That was, so yeah, I was working on that series of books for 8 years, and it was the best gig. It was really phenomenal because I had a chance to explore all the stuff that had really interested me. And it was a proper editing gig. So I was writing books, I was editing books, and it was fun. It was using my skills, which were, you know, word nerdery. And then it was also this great material. So I was just swimming in this stuff for the better part of a decade.
All right. And I think that wraps up the general introduction part. And again, we will be diving into a lot more about Matt's background, his journey with the weird books, and more into his science and technology writings, which seem to have sparked his career. So moving forward, we are going to have our valedictorian dive into the wonderful or not so wonderful world of Krampus. So Veronica, it's all you.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you so much, everybody here at headquarters, for being with us tonight. Thank you, Matt, so much for agreeing to come on with us. I had the pleasure of making Matt's acquaintance, I think this time last year, back at a public library event where Matt hosted a few open mics and also gave us a few lectures on haunted Delco. I'm sure he picked that up, you know, for all of your weird Pennsylvania research and whatnot. But he is also a dark folklore and Krampus expert. So, Matt, to begin with, can you tell us who is Krampus and what led you to your interest in Krampus?
Well, Krampus is he's one of the dark folkloric characters. This is a season, obviously, when the days get shorter, the nights get longer. It's a season where there's a lot of darkness around. And it's also a season in which every culture in the Northern Hemisphere has a festival of lights somehow. You know, because what happens is it gets cold, you get miserable, you get depressed. And there's danger, you know, there's danger all around you. There's danger of starvation. There's wild animals that want to eat you. So there's the culture is one of extreme darkness and fear, which is one of the reasons that, you know, there are Christmas ghost stories and horror stories around this time of year. And there's this interplay of darkness and light. There are, sort of like glowing, nice, warm characters. There are, and then there were dark and dangerous characters. And, you know, the Krampus was one of these old, old folklore characters. They're called Pirkten in German, and they're a light and dark Pirkten, and he's one of the dark ones. There are some that are glowing and bright and warm and wonderful, and then there's other ones like Krampus, who is out to get you. And if folklore serves a purpose, it is basically to train people to survive in the world around them. And the Krampus is one of those dangerous characters that will get you if you put a foot wrong. And many folkloric characters are used to train children into how to behave. There's always something dark in the woods. There's a witch in the woods that's going to eat you. And that keeps children out of the woods. There are dark spirits in the water, so it keeps children from drowning. And the Krampus, as he has evolved in folklore, has become this agent of retribution. If you behave badly, then this character, who is huge, he has horns, he's got a huge long tongue, he's got a fistful of birch whips in one hand, he's got a sack in another or a basket in another, and he, if you take a wrong step, will thrash you. If you're really unlucky, he'll bang you in his sack, and then he will carry you off.
Carry you off to hell, as my research tells me. So with the horns and the kind of demonic aesthetic of him, is that your favorite depiction? Do you have a favorite depiction of Krampus in particular?
Well, I do. There was a series of folk. He was very popular for postcards in the 1920s. Mm-hmm. And the lolling great tongue and the beatings and the chains and everything. He's kind of a sexy character in some of these saucy postcards. And then he's very seldom really terrifying, as he is in the Krampus Lauf in Austria and Germany. I got to admit, one of my favorite, and it would be my favorite because I worked with this guy on an illustration, Jimmy Link.
He's another person we're both acquainted with.
Yes, indeed. He's a neighbor of mine. He was 8 years old when I met him. So the son of a neighbor of mine, he is a lovely illustrator, and he worked on this illustration. I'm going to show it to you. There we go. I really like this because he looks kind of impish in this picture, but he's also kind of grotesque. And so I kind of like this one, but yeah, I'm biased that way because.
No, I do love it too. I'm a big fan of Jimmy's work. It's so cool that he got the opportunity to illustrate something as awesome as Krampus. Is there anything in regards to the lore of Krampus that you think gets overlooked?
People assume that he is there to punish, that he is an evil character. I don't think he is. I think that he is a necessary part of balance. I think he's an agent of retribution. If there is a wrong done, there needs to be a commensurate level of punishment for it. This is a season where everyone's supposed to be, sort of like warm and friendly and loving. And that is essentially this is how people live in communities. Yes, we are supposed to be accepting. But if people transgress, the norms of society, if they are just mean or they do wrong by other people, it offends everyone's sense of justice, particularly children. If somebody gets away with something that is, they know is wrong, it undermines your faith in doing right. And Krampus, because of the way he looks and because he's a creature of horror, is treated like an evil thing. No, he's an agent of retribution. He needs to be there so that there's a balance. People are naturally drawn. I think people are naturally drawn to doing good. But some people are not. And if they transgress, then they need to be brought into order. And I think that he's basically, he's not an agent of chaos. He's an agent of keeping things on the straight and narrow. And I think that is very, very often, you know, sort of overlooked.
Oh, yeah, completely. And that perfectly ties into our next question, which is just personal interest of mine, like between lighter folklore, like what Santa Claus has kind of evolved into, minus all of the, you know, ridiculous commercialism,
right,
and things like Krampus and the Icelandic Yule lads. Mm-hmm. What do you think is more effective in educating and entertaining children? And do you think they both have equal value, especially like in this day and age?
I really do think they have equal value. Mm-hmm. I think that, again, too much darkness drags you down, drags you into depression. It drags you and it isolates you.
Mm-hmm.
Too much, you know, lightness and sweetness and too much candy, you know, it's just not good for you.
Mm-hmm.
It creates an unrealistic expectation of what life is about. And so
that is an excellent point.
I'm hugely in favor of, I'm often a Pollyanna about things. I really like the idea that life is a positive thing and that, you know, this is the best of all possible worlds and we can make it better by, you know, by our actions. I also know that not everyone thinks that way. So it is good to be reminded every so often that there are people or agents of darkness and that there are also agents of light and that we need both essentially to create a balance in the world this is one of the reasons I rather like the way Krampus in particular is portrayed, because, you know, often in these postcards that were circulated in the 1920s,
mm-hmm.
there is Saint Nicholas, who's a bishop. I mean, you know, he's got the mitre, he's got the clerical robes, and he's there handing out, you know, good things to the good children. And then in the back there is the other side, the creature that gets the bad children and makes sure that they are duly treated appropriately for what they have done.
Just through this whole research journey, we've covered kind of like the just the evolution and the mixtures of pagan and Christian entities like Saint Nicholas and mm-hmm. kind of the bishop look with the idea of like an alpine demon.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about the inevitable evolution and mixtures of local folklore over time, both religious and regional? Like, what do you think about their evolution overall? Do you think they should try to be more preserved at this point as they are, or do you think that their evolution and mixture is something to like kind of look forward to for all of us?
I like the way folklore adapts to changing societal views. A lot of folklore that I grew up reading in the 1960s, you know, was stuff that had been written in the 1930s that my parents had grown up with, and it was relevant to them at that point because they lived in a different world. And I think that as people's viewpoint, we don't live in an agrarian society anymore. We mm-hmm. don't get, you know, the seasons of, you know, most of us at any rate don't get the seasons of harvest and just how perilous, you know, winter is. We're somewhat insulated from that in an urbanized and mechanized industrial society.
Mm-hmm.
So in order for folklore to really gel and to stick, it has to adapt. So, you know, the old folkloric characters, as they were relevant, you know, 1,000 years ago and before, they were Christianized in a lot of cases. You know, the Krampus became Christianized also. Mm-hmm. You know, he
became kind of like a sidekick of Saint Nicholas.
Exactly. Yeah, mm-hmm. He was never supposed to be that. Well, the thing that always got me was in German folklore. You know, so everything. You know, so the present giving is December 5th.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is Saint Nicholas's night. So, you know, that's when the presents happen, and by the time, you know, so 3 weeks later, when, you know, sort of like, you know, they celebrate the birth of Christ, when that happens, you know, there's a creature called the Christkindl, who is it's German for Christ child,
mm-hmm.
but it's a woman and glows. So this is actually one of the Leitpechten. You know, it is completely it's a Christian stamp put on something that's totally not Christian. You know, it was relevant, I guess, at the time, but I always thought why is the Christ child a fully grown woman? And that made no sense to me as a kid. It still doesn't, except that historically that's what had happened, and it was relevant to them at the time in that situation, in this Alpine situation where everyone went to a Catholic church. It doesn't make a tremendous amount of sense now, and so things do have to adapt.
Oh, great. Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I'm really interested in just because I meet a lot of different people who are like, they take a hard stance like, no, this as it is right now needs to be preserved. But, you know, if you look at history, just mm-hmm. if you are a history nerd, I think like you and me both are, you know, that things naturally mix over time for the better or for the more interesting. So thank you so much. I think that ties up our Krampus questions. Thank you so much again, Matt, for being, you know, this beacon of intellectual stimulation for me and for all of us here at Study Hall.
All right. So, yeah, we're going to give the floor to Al, and he's going to kind of wrap things up with some questions for Matt, and we will move on with our what has so far been a pretty fucking awesome presentation. So, Al, it's all you.
So a friend once told me, do what you love and you'll never have to work a day in your life. Would that be the case for you?
I've got this like Scottish Calvinist kind of upbringing here. The idea of not doing a day's work in my life sounds awful.
So I'm like a true damn Calvinist. You brought Calvinism into this.
I'm sorry, it was there. I had to pick it up. You are a product of your upbringing and your culture, and mine was one of, you know, so the idea of, I like work, I really do, and I happen to really enjoy probably somewhere between 45% and 75% of what I do at any given time, I really like. But there's always going to be 65% to 25%. You know, I'm doing this math on the fly. That's not bad. So, there's always going to be that element that I basically don't like. But, you know, I don't like working so much as I like having worked. I like to be able to say I've finished something and it's done and I can move on to the next thing. So I do love what I do, even if I don't really like it, because at some point I'll have finished it and I'll be able to think, right, that's done. What's next?
So tell us about your passion for the infamous Elf on the Shelf.
Am I allowed to swear?
You most certainly are.
Fuck 100%.
Yeah. Fucking hate him. Not a big fan of the Elf on the Shelf, and I will tell you why. It actually relates very specifically to Krampus. I became enchanted with Krampus and this business of light and dark. A lot of people were basically being surface judgmental on him. He's like, he looks frightening. I don't like that. I don't think it's a good idea to have this around children. And these were the selfsame people who had an Elf on the Shelf. And despite what it says on the cover of the Elf on the Shelf book, it's not a Christmas tradition. What it is a 10-year-old creation of a soccer mom and her mom, and the twin of the soccer mom who was a merchandiser. It was very cynically created to shift product. The Elf on the Shelf was a toy that they could sell for a really inflated price. And when I read the poetry, I can't believe I used the word poetry. When I read this doggerel garbage of the story, I thought, this isn't even well done. And when I looked at the pictures, the illustrations, I didn't think they were well done. I thought that it was,
they weren't up to Matt Lake's standards.
Hey, I was an editor for 15 years before this had happened. I didn't even dare call myself a writer. And this is nothing, but I didn't dare call myself a writer until 8 years after I'd written my first book, because it felt like a presumption. And then there were these people who could not write, who put this thing out to sell product that was, so yeah, there's a whole lot of, you know, resentment I have against the Elf on the Shelf. Not least because It wasn't even okay. I've hit on the quality of the product and the motivation behind the product, and the fact they called it a tradition, and it wasn't a tradition. It's false representation. So it was a false representation of a product that was a product that was designed to extricate the hard earned money of parents in order to placate their children, and that stuff really bugs me. So apart from that, apart from all of that, you have a character here that is essentially a spy in your own home who, by his own admission, will rat you out to the big guy. You can tell him secrets, but you can't touch him. But you can tell him your secrets because he's your friend, but he will rat you out to the big guy. Everything about him just seemed like really devious and unpleasant as a character. Whereas the Krampus, who was being reviled by these selfsame parents that were, you know, that had the elf on the shelf for their children, the Krampus is a just agent of retribution, and this guy's just a sneak. So I loathe the elf on the shelf with a deep and abiding passion. And when Jimmy Link, who illustrated my Krampus book, and I, the year after we brought the book out, we were out going to events and like, you know, basically touting the book and doing Krampus fun things. He and I dressed up as Saint Nicholas, and he and his brother dressed up as Santa Claus, and we just rampaged through Baltimore for an entire month, and it was great. But during this time, we would go home. Or go back to our Airbnb, and we'd have a couple of drinks, and we'd basically think of ways in which we could like punish the elf on the shelf. And we wound up with a book called 50 Ways to Off an Elf, where like, you know, hang him by the chimney with care, you know, sort of like have him trampled to death by the rockets. Bury him with a stake of holly through his heart, you know, anything Christmas yes. related. And, you know, sort of, you know, Jimmy was there, you know, sort of like driving from place to place. Jimmy would be there sketching out this stuff, and I'd be coming up with the lyrics, description. The verses. Some of them were verses, yeah. The Grinch used the elf as a toothbrush, for example. And, so that was a fun little poem to write. Anyway, so, what was the question?
Tell us about your passion for the infamous Elf on the Shelf, and I believe you've answered that. So, do you think the Elf on the Shelf is supposed to be kind of like a ripoff of Krampus, or just a pale imitation, like a pale cutesy, you know, innocent version of it, or what do you think comparing the two?
Well, I have respect for Rankin Bass, I really do. You know, sort of, you know, Frosty the Snowman. Fine, you know, sort of all of these things. But they are not folkloric, they're designed as entertainments. And yeah, they were designed to, you know, to turn a buck or two, and I totally respect that. It's an entertainment that's designed to, this thing was designed and marketed as a tradition. And it's fake lore. I mean, it's not a tradition at all. And as a consequence, you know, I think it's pernicious because it I think it undermines the spirit of Christmas more than anything else. That's the notion that, you know, sort of you have a gift giving season where family gets together. I love those things because every culture during winter, people have to get together. You survive in a season of harshness by getting together, getting drunk, eating, because it elevates your mood, and it makes in the midst of darkness, which brings everybody down, you know, and cold, which brings everybody down, you create ways to celebrate together. There's fire, there's flame, there's feasting, and there's, you know, just general conviviality. These things are the good things about this season. And having some sneak rat you out to the big guy is not a part of that and shouldn't be.
So wrapping things up, thank you again, Matt, for sharing everything with us. How can our audience and our listeners find your books and material?
Well, a lot of the books that I wrote for other people like the weird books, for example. You can find them at bookstores and online bookstores. I've recently started to do some very local stuff for Delaware County. A wonderful colleague of mine with whom I've been writing for better part of 6 or 7 years, a woman by the name of Laurie Hull. She and I have brought together a series of dark history stories based around media, the county seat of Delaware County, Media Gothic. We do a walking tour of media, and we recently brought out a book, which this feels like vile touting, but I'm really rather proud of this thing. This is the dark history of Media Delaware County, Media Gothic. So we brought out a book here. This is only available at media retailers, so it's probably going to be outside the scope of many of your listeners, but anybody on State Street that sells stuff, they're going to be carrying this book. Details of that are at mediagothic.com. And if you want to track me down on the social media, I'm that Matt Lake face the book and that kind of stuff. So that's pretty much how you track me down. Although I'm starting to discover from your illustrious producer over there that it's pretty easy to track me down from the breadcrumb trail of the past 30 years. He's been horrifying with me with details that I didn't think were public.
A couple of strategic Google searches with all those weird things that you learn in your queries and in college. It produced some good results. So
I mistrust a man with a knowledge of Boolean operators.
And for everybody out there at headquarters who's not a complete computer nerd junkie, I would like to end this with saying, hey, I met Matt at a public library event. When our lives are back to normal and COVID is, somewhat just out of our scope of reality, please take the time to research your local community events and local events at your local public libraries. If you can get there, if you can make it, go with friends. You will be surprised by the amount of talent, you will see you will get from these public resources. Authors, illustrators, general intellectuals. It's been such a pleasure, and it's kind of a small world. I had a great time, Matt. Thank you so much.
We all did. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Matt. It was awesome.
Halloween's over. Thanksgiving has passed. The trees and the lights have appeared at last. In the stores, all the Christmas stuff's out on the shelves. The tinsel, the snow globes, the lights, and the elves. And right about now, it can hardly be missed. The grown-ups start talking about Santa's list. Are you naughty or nice? They all want to know. And each time that they ask you, anxieties grow. You try to be nice, or at least, well, you should. But what do they mean? Because no one's all good. We all get annoyed and do things we regret, even grown-ups. And yet we forgive and forget.
Good.
So what about Santa's list? Naughty or nice? Well, I'll tell you. But listen, I won't tell you twice. This secret has been kept for many a year. Santa just keeps the nice list. There's no need to fear. If you're basically good, you will get your reward. If you're rotten right through, then prepare for my hoard. For I keep the list of the naughty, I swear. Yes, I am the Krampus. You'd better beware. I assemble my list from close observation. I spy and I phone tap with great dedication. You may see me or hear me as I skulk about. And know this about me. I'm no friendly scout. You'd better believe that I'm not very nice. I'm making a list and I'm checking it twice. And if you're on it, you'd better beware. I'll punish you hard and I won't even care. So, how will you know that you're there on my list? I'll show you some clues that you'll find hard to miss. Look around till you see me, up high on the shelf, and check out my hands to see for yourself. Am I holding a chain to be used for restraint? Do you think that that's good? Because it certainly ain't. I chain up the mean kids and laugh as they weep, and scare most of them straight as their parents all sleep. Am I holding some birch sticks? Well, that's even worse. If I'm holding some birch sticks, then somebody's cursed. Those sticks will thrash kids who are thoroughly rotten. If you see them, you'll know that I haven't forgotten. So there are your warnings, the chain and the sticks. If you see them, you'd better give up your mean tricks, because a beating's by far not the worst I can do. Say your prayers, because you don't want this happening to you. If you look round your house on a cold winter's day, and I'm up on the shelf, or your couch or duvet, look around or behind me, in front and in back, and see if I've brought my big Krampusy sack. If I have, you're in danger because you've been awful, and punishment's coming that's cruel, but it's lawful. You'll be stuffed in that sack, it's so sad to tell, and I'll carry you off in it straight down to... Well, I think you're now wise to my place in the world. I'm the Krampus, and I know every boy and each girl. Most of you, Santa will shower with love. The rest of you suffer the Krampus's shove. So every year, on St. Nicholas night, I'll come to your home, not to give you a fright, but remind you that I keep the naughty kids list, and no one who's on it will ever be missed. They'll be gone. And I think that is all for the best. For peace upon earth, and goodwill to the rest.
All right, welcome back, Degenerates. That was awesome. Thank you so much, Matt Lake, for being a part of this special virtual headquarters presentation. We also will be featuring Matt Lake in an extended podcast that will be released next Sunday. Definitely check that out. We go into Matt's background with his scientific literature, his journey from Birmingham to the States, and how he got involved into the weird book journey, and more in his interest into dark folklore. So very happy with how that interview went. And once again, thank you, Matt. That was fantastic. Some special thanks and shout outs. I know it's getting late. We're going to wrap up here. I really want to thank the VHQ staff. I was part of the Halloween special. I mean, I was active. I was logged on most of the evenings. It was fucking awesome. It was engaging. It was theatric. It was like, it was enthralling. It gave me something to do in this fucked COVID world. And the amount of effort that goes into these presentations. I know some people were watching us on Twitch. This is new technology and new form, but the amount of work that goes into everything that you're involved with virtual headquarters is phenomenal. So huge shout out in Avis Satanis to everybody involved in putting this whole thing together. Thank you so much. We had a blast putting this presentation together and working with Matt. Our Krampus Carol, if you have not seen it, came out phenomenal. I mean, I was humbled. The amount of work that other submissions put in was unbelievable. The 23rd was a night to remember. The judging, the panel, we had Krampus, who might have been a little bit of partial to our satanic carol, but nonetheless it was fantastic. So thank you everybody who tuned in and was a part of that. Thank you for running the carol contest, and thank you for Matt for writing the lyrics to Decked in the Halls. It was fucking awesome. So on top of that, we had a little bit of an issue, with our Krampus Carol, and we kind of rolled with it. We had an idea we went back and forth on about some elves on the shelves. And so they ended up being three elves ended up being convicted and executed for their horrendous crimes against Satanic Study Hall. Father Al, can you tell us a little bit about what happened there?
I'm sorry to have to do this. Well, from what I heard from Headmistress Olga, these elves were the ones behind a rash of fuckery around the study hall. Headmistress Olga unfortunately had to find them guilty of ratting out Principal Pan's stash of Playboys to Santa Claus, playing Pearl Jam on the Satanic Study Hall loudspeakers.
Fuck Pearl Jam.
Streaming my Father Al's confessional to the school's OnlyFans account, replacing the Devil's Dictionary with the Best of Tourette's guy.
Holy shit!
Bob Saget. Anyway, let's see here. Using Johnny's drumsticks... Satan. I can't even say that one out loud.
What do you mean, my drumsticks?
You don't want to know.
We didn't tell him.
And just no. For being dicks.
Yeah, you hear it on the Devil's Dictionary. Don't be a dick. If you don't be a dick, you get along well in life.
I thought they smelled funny.
You saw how those elves went up. Yes. Don't let that happen to you.
Father Al, how can our listeners and viewers here at headquarters find the full elf execution?
Go to our YouTube channel. Just look up Satanic Study Hall in the search, and you'll see the elf execution video.
Yes, so thank you for that. We've gotten some good feedback on that already. And it was so fucking good that we put it in our Krampus Carol. Why not, right? It made for some good cutaway footage. Now, some quick thank yous before we wrap up. Love City Satanists. Fucking awesome group of people. Proud to be a member. There's great things in the works with Love City right now. So, again, keep your eye out and your ears in tune for some big happenings coming out of that group. Satanic Temple, New York City. Since we launched this podcast, unreal support, whether it's a retweet, a like, a share, a comment. Thank you so much for your support and for everything that you've done for the Satanic community. Your presentations on TST TV, here at Virtual Headquarters. Rock the fuck on. Hail Satan. We love you and thank you for all your support. Aria and Baphomet. We just had Aria on for a two-part personal journey series where we took a pretty deep dive into her story, how Satanism came to her, and her journey overall. And it's some of the best material we've produced so far here at Satanic Study Hall. I think our listeners would agree. Aria is active with Baphomet on Twitter and all facets of social media. Fuck Facebook. I'm right behind you, Aria. I'm just working on my exit strategy. But you've been so incredibly helpful and supportive to the podcast and us. So thank you so much for that. We talked about Mason Hargett and Stephen Bradford Long. Woo-hoo! They're coming up on our two-part Normie Satanism series. All of our supporters and kick-ass guests. The numbers that are viewing this do not matter to us at all. Just the support and the feedback that we get to get better, to grow, and just to give our listeners and supporters better content. All of our Patreon supporters, I'm not going to sit here and ask you to support. That's up to us to do on our own time. But thank you to everybody who contribute to the podcast. It's ridiculously humbling that, you know, a small group of Satanists, you know, whether new or experienced, have come together to kind of, you know, under this guise of study hall and in the classroom, learn and project those learnings to this community that has been so welcoming to us. Outside of that, you know, every episode that we've been able to put out has been almost raising the bar from the last. And that has been only because of Al and Dennis and Veronica and Johnny. Behind the scenes tonight, we have Tyler producing this. Tyler created our logo. You know, Winter is, you know, holding down, chilling with Principal Pan in chat. This has been fucking awesome.
And Bill, shout yourself out. You have right. No idea how hard Thank this you. Gentleman works. It is an inspiration, and I don't say that, you know, I mean that.
Well, thank you all.
We can't forget about Eros's cousin, Belial.
Yes, Belial. Belial is a troublemaker. Belial is chilling with Dennis tonight, holding down, watching the presentation, giving us some feedback. But we do have Eros. Eros is vocal. So it's been an incredible six-month journey. Now, I think we do not have time for Q&A, so it's time to say goodnight. Thank you all for being here. We are going to wrap up this presentation with a special Sol Invictus invocation that was crafted and put together by our own Father Al. So I am going to say Hail Satan, Ave Satanas, and from the bottom of my little black heart, it's been an absolute pleasure. Team out there, anything you want to add before we go?
I just thank everybody for tuning in and for being here. And thank you guys for allowing me this great opportunity to be part of this podcast.
Yeah, what that guy said. No, thanks to our amazing team. Thanks to all of our supporters. We couldn't have done it without you. And we're only looking to bring bigger and greater things forward in 2021. Hail Satan.
Again, what they said it perfectly, but I want to say thank you to everybody who turned out tonight, everybody who is a constant supporter of ours, who's active in the goat farm. It's such a, it's a beautiful community, probably the first beautiful community I've ever been a part of. I love my brothers, and when I say brothers, I mean co-hosts here. They are fantastic, very intelligent, and hilarious men. And, you know, this Christmas, this has turned from a commercialized concoction of bullshit to, like, it's taken me back to the folklore, the dark ages, which I love. I absolutely love. So it's nothing but an educational experience all the time. Thank you guys so much. I hope you had an awesome holiday.
And we have been told, our producer just whispered in my little ear and said, there's no fucking orchestra to rush us off stage. So we're going to come back after you hear the bell. We will come back. We will have our producer kind of feed in some questions, and we'll shoot the shit with y'all in the room. So on that note, we love you. We'll be right back after we close up here. We're going to steal this presentation for an actual podcast because we're greedy as fuck like that. But nonetheless, we love you. Hail Satan. And we'll be right back.
My fellow Satanists, let us rejoice as we celebrate the Sol Invictus. While the days may be cold and dark, our bodies and spirits are kept warm by the light of Lucifer, the Morning Star, the Lightbringer. We gather not to honor false deities or other superstitious nonsense, but to honor each other, our family, our friends, and our satanic community, bound together by calling, purpose, and the unquenchable thirst for truth and unity. We reflect upon Sol Invictus, meaning unconquered sun, representing the sun god Sol of the latter Roman Empire, along with the epithet Invictus used for many deities such as Jupiter, Mars, Hercules, and Apollo. We contemplate the meaning of the word Invictus, which is translated as unconquerable. We stand as one, unconquered and undeterred, united by our satanic faith. Let us be grateful for our satanic community, yet always keep in our minds and hearts those whose religious beliefs have brought upon them humiliation, persecution, loss, suffering, and death. Let us be thankful for our family and friends, but we should never neglect those who are celebrating this holiday season without such bonds, either through loss, abandonment, or necessity for their own well-being. Let us not discount our health, for despite our ailments and weaknesses, we still draw breath every day. We should use our capacity, how great or small, to assist those who suffer daily due to the limitations placed upon them by our fragile mortal vessels. Let us be appreciative of our homes and all of our material possessions, but we must never turn a blind eye to those who anguish daily due to lacking even the most basic of human necessities. Let us wake up each day thankful for the ability to serve our neighbors and our community, and we must never take for granted our obligation to help those less fortunate than ourselves. We close this invocation with the words spoken to us by the late actor John Dunsworth. You know what the best currency is? The best currency, the most valuable currency of all, is gratitude. When you're dead, but you're not quite so dead if you contribute something. Happy Sol Invictus and Happy New Year to our entire Satanic Temple community. Ave Satanas and good night.
Class is dismissed.